Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now, my shit together is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Lord North Bay, Dyson Jack, Thompson, all rookie on the board. SP Futures down 18. NASDAQ Futures down 64. We're starting the day down a little bit. Yesterday we had, these are very holiday days. Yesterday we ended up down 2 in the S&P and 10 in the NASDAQ, so it wasn't much of a day. Very, very slow. Very, very, very slow, as they say. We have Professor Kevin.
Morning.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay.
Sound like you have a little bit of a throat thing going.
A little bit of a cold today.
It's been traveling around. It traveled to you.
Found its way all the way from Chicago to Michigan.
Yes. So you're all cold starting in Chicago now?
I'm holding you personally responsible.
This is a left wing thing. These colds.
It probably is. Yeah.
Could be. Yeah. You never know. I was very happy that I dozed early on the Bear game last night. Wow.
Yeah, I woke up for the closing minutes.
Oh God.
And it was the clock management was so bad, everything about it. There was there was one play on the Bears' last drive when Williams he just had to heave up a pass that was caught, and it was kind of an amazing play. But to believe that three guys could get on him that quickly was amazing. And I saw the clip online this morning, and just watched. Who was it? Pryor and Shelton. Shelton's the center. Pryor, I think, was the right guard. And watching these two guys jump up on the snap and block nobody was just amazing.
I've never seen anything quite like it. I mean, it's solid. Next week they could break the all-time sack record.
Hey, go for it.
Yeah, they need 9 or something.
You got to make this season memorable.
Tell you what, I'm getting more impressed with the score.
Like 6 times last night, 6 or 7 times.
I think it was 7.
Yeah.
So the bar downstairs in our building runs buses, right? And so all these people are down there to get on the buses. And you've never seen anything like you only have like a half hour to drink type of thing. You got to get on the bus, and it's more expensive at the stadium. You never saw more drinking for a purpose. I haven't seen it in ages, like last night. I mean, rounds of shots and everybody, making sure they hit the bathroom before they go, and drinks to go cup drinks. I mean, the last 10 minutes, I don't know how many drinks they sold downstairs. I mean, with the trays of shots, 15, 20 shots in a tray at like $8 a throw or $9 a throw. And this is a regular dive bar. I'm like, oh my God. And then they charge you on a bus, $10 a ticket. I don't know how many, but I will say this: out of the maybe 80, 90, 100 people that got on a bus, I don't think one of them, maybe one or two, had rain gear. Everybody else was in their Bear jerseys as the outer layer. I mean, how do they sit there all night long? And you can't go anywhere if the bus is going to pick you up to the end of the game. I mean, you could.
Well,
not my idea of a wild evening. First,
you drink heavily enough, why do you care?
I guess, but what are you doing, passed out in the rain? I mean, what does that do you? I think there's going to be a few coals there. I mean, I never saw so much. Every time he would say another 10 minutes for the bus, you better another drink, people would storm the bar for, like, shots and stuff. I mean, it was like, and these people are not 25. I mean, they're older. I don't get it. But the last thing, I don't know, when I was younger, the last thing you want to do is go to a four-hour event when you're already bleep-faced. What's the point? I don't know.
I'll tell you, if I were to do that now, I would be asleep by halftime.
Even in the stands, yeah.
I don't care how many people are around me.
It's just, And then the game, I mean, the whole second half had to be how boring. Plus, it poured the whole time, pretty much. Ugh. Football in Chicago, I guess. And so they have one more game up in Green Bay. That's going to be brutal, too. And then they're done. We're having a big debate last night. How many people on the Bears could start for the Ravens? I'm thinking three, maybe. My guys, of course, the Bear fans are up to 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm going. I think our punter is pretty much better than anybody. The Bear punter.
Yeah. Receivers are pretty good.
Yeah, would they'd play? But would they start? I don't know. Safety, one corner is pretty good too. There's a few guys. Sweat maybe. Well, you never hear his name called because he double teamed every play. It's just an amazing lack of a 45-man roster. It's just unbelievable. I don't get it. But that's what we're seeing in sports, and there must be just so much money that really make any difference. You just wonder what all this is going to come. Is it just going to keep going, Kevin? I was watching, I'm keeping an eye on this Nippon Steel, U.S. Steel thing. And kind of a minor theme of the show, because obviously that's stocks and jacks, and that's what I do for a living, is you wonder what, people see the stock market, and every day it's, it's up, it's this, and everybody's getting rich and all this stuff, and that's great, but you wonder if anybody really thinks for a second what the stock market is all about. The stock market is here as a secondary market to allow companies to be priced essentially in a market setting and for people to get out of or into stocks they want. But the real reason for it is so people can issue primary offerings, and then the person who buys them knows that it'll be a liquid market if they need to get out for whatever any reason. I mean, the reason why IBM trades is because one day, maybe a few days, IBM went out and sold stock to people. And it trades in the secondary market because if they ever want to do it again, everybody knows just what IBM is worth in the market and so forth. Whether it's overvalued or undervalued, that's what it's worth. And that's the reason for it. And yet, you see this U.S. Steel, they're talking about Nippon, seeing a huge opportunity and going to put $1 billion into place. And blah blah blah, you were the one who was saying that there's secondary steel manufacturers, but if there is this boomlet, I'll call it, going forward with naval construction and God knows what else, infrastructure, bridges, you name it, if Nippon can see this, why can't U.S. Steel and say we want these contracts and to go after them in an efficient manner? We need to spend $1 billion on all our stuff, which isn't all that much considering how big the place is. Why the hell don't they just go out and buy and sell $1 billion worth of stock or bonds? I mean, does anybody even think our market works like it's supposed to? I mean, does everybody have to stick their nose up the ass of government and get all these fee refunds and tax refunds and free property and all this stuff to build anything? Don't we have a system here that's supposed to work and people are supposed to see opportunity and be able to get capital, and then the next day the thing would be trading someplace where if you have to get out, you can get out? Isn't that the beauty of this? And now are we disbanding all this, or are we deciding this is not what we want anymore, or what?
Well, I'm pretty sure that sounded like questions, but it sounded more like commentary. I would be sort of interested. Mike's on the line, and I'd be sort of interested in what Mike has to say. Looking at it from the perspective of military and someone who had a career in military, that where does onshore sourcing come into play, and where are the important parts of it, and what is sort of the attitude? Because that really, you talked about infrastructure, and I think you're absolutely right there too, but as you start to look at military, how important is it? And I think I know the answer. I think it's almost obvious. How important is it that we be able to source production materials here in the U.S.?
Well, I guess one of the questions maybe you could answer as well is, if all of a sudden I have a great idea for a big company, not a company, but a new plant, a new piece of equipment, is my first call to my investment banker, or is my first call to the friggin' governor? If it's to the governor, I don't think that's a good thing.
Well, it's definitely not a good thing, because we tend to fund out of government. We have this really, really bad habit of funding ventures that fit an agenda and having them go belly up. It's got to have some market support. But then I go back and say, you know, once you start saying I'm going to protect an industry, then you have some other economic inefficiencies that come into play. So, you know, I don't think there's a great answer other than, you know, there are things that we should not cede to foreign competition.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Michael. How are you?
Good. In answer to your question, I think anything critical infrastructure for the military anyways, or critical equipment, should be funded by, hopefully, by investment bankers, and it should be, you know, manufactured in this country. I mean, that's and then we've got to protect our technology through really no technology transfer. There are some countries that are expert about getting a piece of equipment and then I forget the term, but you know, back building it into
engineering it.
Yeah, there you go, Kevin. Thank you. The reverse engineering of that piece of equipment. And our primary competitor right now, the one that's, you know, trying to take over the Pacific and whatever, it is an expert at reverse engineering. And they've done they potentially could do a lot of damage to us. So,
but they started the day after ping pong diplomacy. It's not like they're new at it.
Well, that's probably right. And, you know, Tricky Dick and then whoever wanted them in the WTO, it's really hurt our business. And it's hurt our industries, too. I mean, they've captured the market on rare earth minerals, essentially. So, and that's why they've done so much work in Africa. You know, I've talked about that before, but when I was in, it was in Rwanda, the Chinese were giving them grants to build roads. The Chinese were actually building the roads with maybe some local labor. And then if the Rwandans or if the Ugandans or wherever they were building, but my experience was driving around Rwanda, they couldn't, if they didn't pay for it's supposedly a grant, but if they didn't get what they wanted, then the Chinese would go after something within the Rwandan infrastructure, like the primary airfield at Kigali, for instance.
Well, Mike, the the issue with the rare earth stuff, I think some of it, and maybe even a lot of it, could be mined here. We don't want to process it because it's too dirty, right?
That's correct. And we're, you know, whether we're relying on South Africa, the Democratic Republic of the Congo has a lot of coltan, and that was a hot thing. It still is a hot thing for cell phones, excuse me. It's a critical mineral for that. So, and the DRC had lots of coltan, so that was being mined by, you know, once again, cheap labor. So it's just a matter of, you know, what's a priority for us, and do we want democracy? You know, it's kind of a joke about that. For a long time, the Democratic Republic of Congo never held any elections. So,
but they were called the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yes. Yeah, to differentiate from the Republic of Congo. So.
Ah. Well, I mean, I always thought, when Katz has been doing the show with Dr. G years ago, one of the hardest things for, if the three of us, us guys, were sitting in the Oval Office, I can't think of a harder problem to have than this Chinese situation. I mean, you're going to have a young Bill Gates walk in and say, Consul Mike, these bleeps, they bought five million computers and they bought two prints of software. It looks to me like they're copying it. I mean, duh.
Well, no kidding.
So the next person in is going to be PepsiCo. He goes, what are you talking about? There's a billion Chinese drinking a Pepsi every day. And by the way, we have more and more pictures of the colonel over there than we do of Mao eating Kentucky Fried Chicken. What's wrong? What's wrong? All they're doing is buying stuff from me. I mean, it's depending on which side you're on, they're stealing from some people, and yet other people are customers too.
I mean, well, and I, you know, Tom, it is it's a difficult problem. And the NBA, for instance, you know, tried to expand into China. Then they then the Chinese kind of put the kibosh on capitalism, and that has hurt them. And look at what happened to Hong Kong. The Brits gave Hong Kong back. You know, now we have in today's, I don't know whether it was in the Post or in the Wall Street Journal, you know, 45 people were sentenced for essentially staging a protest to try and get into a primary. So then the CCP said, no, you're not allowed to do that, took them to court, and 45 people are in jail.
Mike, so, you probably know the history of this better than me. When the promise was made to give Hong Kong back, was the promise made to anything like the current government? Who was the promise given to?
It was probably given to... Okay, so it was a 100-year lease that the Brits had with China, or with... I think it was with the people of Hong Kong at the time. But then... The people of Hong Kong, it wasn't the CCP wasn't running China at the time. So once the Brits gave it back, and then the CCP have gradually, not, you know, within the last 20, 30 years, have taken it over. They've kind of changed everything. So,
well, yeah, Russell is going over there a whole bunch of times and taught and everything. He says it's, every time he goes, it's more Chinese.
Yes, and that's exactly right. And I don't know how, let's say, for instance, Macau would work. I mean, that used to be a Portuguese colony. But I think Macau is kind of a different kettle of fish because of all the gambling that takes place there. So the Chinese go there to gamble. But it's probably still, well, I'm sure it's CCP run also. So,
well, you know, there's... keep this brief, but I was actually, one of my clients asked me to look into some of these international bearer bonds that are, it's an amazing world. I knew I wasn't going to get any money for these things, right? But they're essentially bonds issued by governments in places that we recognize, be it Mexico, Germany, and other places, that the current governments say that wasn't us. That's the reason why I asked this question, is our Supreme Court has kind of held up the fact that you don't have to pay these guys. They're gone. I mean, there's actually Santa Ana bearer bonds out there and Maximilian bearer bonds that are worthless because the Mexican government says, I wasn't there. It wasn't me.
Well, and there's probably Third Reich bearer bonds, too.
Actually, there are bearer bonds there from companies in Germany that were supposed to be gold-backed. And the companies are still there, and the banks where the gold was supposed to be are still there. And when Hitler came in, he said, we're not paying any of that stuff. Okay, then. In 1950-something, the Supreme Court said, you know, talk about a circle bleep. After World War One, when the Germans had all kinds of problems paying off, they paid reparations to the French and the Brits, right?
Correct.
And the French and the Brits turned around and paid off loans to us, correct?
Yes.
Somewhere in the bowels of Washington, we allowed Germany to directly sell bearer bonds in this country from these companies. So they predated CUSIP numbers, but they were regular certificates. And people here bought them. The money went to Germany, went to France, and back to Washington. And then all of a sudden, they're no good.
Right. Well, and it's...
Can you even imagine something like that?
Well, I can't really. It's just like the Lend-Lease Act. You know, the Brits benefited from it, but the Russians or the Soviets, excuse me, probably benefited from it a lot more because then that allowed them to open up that scared the Japanese off of invading the Soviet Union, And then the Stalin and crew were able to open up their, well, defend, you know, Western Russia from the Germans. That's how they held them off, was with a lot of American equipment.
Well, they definitely were able to keep their port open.
That's correct.
Which is probably more important at the time to let other stuff in, but...
Well, that's what Murmansk was critical, because that's where the Lend-Lease stuff was coming in, I think.
Well, you mentioned the reverse engineering. My cousin, who's been dead for God knows how long, he was a mining engineer, actually my mother's cousin, and older than my mother, which is even weirder. But no, she was older than him, even though, anyway, it was a screwed-up family where the older people had sons and daughters older than their brothers and sisters, but...
It was old-time Catholic families.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, he was...
Lots of kids and never stopped.
Yep, and he was over in... right after ping-pong diplomacy, and the Chinese... says, how about if we buy one of every type of your mining equipment? And he basically said, you guys are out of your mind. We're going back on the plane. He knew right what they wanted it for.
Right.
Duh.
Well, and there's a little of that that... I used to know some people that worked for John Deere in Germany, and... They would go to Belarus to sell heavy equipment to the Belarusians, and they would sell it. I'm not sure how much reverse engineering was done, because the Belarusians were already good at big farming equipment, so they probably took the best out of what John Deere had and then put it on, you know, figured out how to get it onto their farming equipment.
So. Well, Kevin, which one of our guests, it had to be Lou, I was talking about when the 787 was being designed and built, the Boeing, the Chinese, since they were going to be such big customers for that plane, demanded that they make some of it over there. And I think they were they going to make the tail or something like that? But they always demand the blueprints,
right,
of the entire plane, not just the tail. Now, with something like that, I don't think they have the technology to do that. Those fiber wings, so Boeing's probably safe for a while. But because it's one thing to have the prints; it's quite another to be able to make the thing, right?
Yeah. And truth be told, I don't know why you would want somebody to make a part like the tail and not have the whole print, because you have to look at the whole system and consider it. So that just means, you know, your question is: should you give it to them at all? Should you be involved with them at all?
Well, if they say we're going to buy 200 of them, I guess you do. Huh? Well, that's what I'm saying. It's so interplayed.
Okay, then you're going to, you know, and if they steal your technology, then you're saying, okay, I'll take the short term, profitability in exchange for them stealing my technology. You're either in or you're out on these things. But you know, I really don't want engineers who have a very limited view of the airplane to be designing key parts of the airplane.
You can't be half a gangster, Nucky.
Got it.
Mike, in your military opinion, what would have happened, the same issue was really starting to happen with Nazi Germany, correct? And if Hitler would have held off another 4 or 5 years and invading people, how bad do you think we'd have been with that guy?
I think we could have been in trouble, Tom. I mean, there's plenty of alternative histories written about he should have just waited, because he was getting all that he wanted, and he was developing Germany into quite a military power. So he should have just held off, but that wasn't his goal. You know, he wanted the Third Reich. You know, I know I'm oversimplifying it. So, and He attacked Poland and then Russia. You know, he violated the Molotov-Ribbentrop pact, and then he was really stupid and opened up conflict against France and Britain. So, once he attacked Poland, the British and the French were obligated to a degree.
But I think he also was broke. That's why he did it. He spent all that money that he really didn't have, so he had to go steal it from somebody.
Right.
Which is what he did, kind of what he did. I mean, they looted France, right, and pretty much...
Yes, he looted France, he looted probably Poland, what was there anyways. And he wanted to, you know, it was all about the Lebensraum.
Yeah.
With, so living space for the Germans. So.
Well, I don't know you know more about the German people, but I saw these guys on History Channel. You know, they're all got to be dead now, but they said if he'd have gotten assassinated like the night before he invaded Poland and they wouldn't have done it, he'd have been considered the best leader of the 20th century. He got those guys out of a depression way faster than anybody else did.
Right. By essentially, taking over power.
Well, but I mean, they got out of it a lot quicker than we did. Matter of fact, I mean, I was stunned to see some stuff that, you know, people send me, a lot of listeners, of Madison Square Garden, like Nazi rallies and stuff. I mean, people think we didn't have any kind of, during the Depression, nobody here, everybody was happy with our system. That was so far from the truth, it's scary, right?
Right, that's exactly right.
How can you be happy with it?
And there was a significant German presence in the United States, or, you know, ethnic German presence in the United States that wanted us to stay neutral in the war. And that's why I think Roosevelt was kind of in a bind at the beginning. So,
well, he was totally. And then there was stuff he didn't want to tell people, which is even more, you know, bizarre. But, you know, you read these things and you watch them and you see how stuff kind of happens and then another thing happens and all of a sudden you're up to the eyeballs and crap. And you got to be careful it doesn't happen again all the time. You know, and people seem oblivious to it, don't they?
Yes. Well, you know, yesterday when I was talking, and there was a guy that I used to work with, and you guys have heard the quote before, and he used to repeat this quote all the time. You know, history repeats itself. And once again, we're coming full circle, whether it's in the government or whether it's with the Chinese, the Russians are pulling their thing, and this Azerbaijani jet that was knocked out in Kazakhstani airspace, who knows really what knocked that down? So. The incident is very similar to the Malaysian airliner that was knocked out by the Russians, but then they accused the Ukrainians of doing it using Ukrainian air defense systems. Well, the Ukrainian air defense systems at the time were Russian air defense systems, so it was very easy to confuse the issue with the disinformation. And the same thing's kind of going on now. They're saying, okay, it was Russian drones or it was a flock of birds, but a flock of birds doesn't put holes in an airliner. So
no. What was the final story of the?
Oh, come on, I watched Woody Woodpecker. I know what they're capable of.
Yeah.
Well, Woody was tough though, Kevin. Yeah. So
Woody was pretty badass. Yep.
What was the final determination on the plane they shot down to kill the guy from that was ran that.
Oh, the Wagner guy.
Yeah,
the head of. I have no idea.
I would like to be on a plane.
They just make stuff up, you know.
Well, I mean, it just happened, and he was in. To this day, a lot of conspiracy people are convinced the one down in Scotland was because there was all these CIA people on it.
Well, that could very well be.
That evidently,
you mean the Lockerbie incident?
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, the story is that I've read different things that have come my way that. The CIA people are not supposed to fly on passenger jets for just that reason. I guess there was a bunch of them on there. I mean, how can you tell? How could you prove that?
Oh, who knows? But, I mean, that's all this dark state conspiracy stuff that, you know, personally, I think that's a lot of hooey that, you know, conspiracy theorists just throw around the internet and it just gets people going.
Well, I think you're right about that. I do wonder, I mean, I'm sort of getting in that group myself, and that I look at some of the economic stuff that's going around, and I look at money supply numbers here and in Britain and other places, and they're identical. I mean, who's behind this stuff? I mean, I can't believe our people and the Brits are talking every day to do this stuff together. I mean, who's really in charge? It makes you wonder. At an economic point, I don't know, I mean, at a military point, I hope it's not the same thing.
Well, when I was, you know, when I was driving that limo from O'Hare to Oak Brook, there was a guy that I used to work with, was convinced that it was a Jewish conspiracy, you know, the conspiracy of 500. So, I mean, you've had these conspiracy theories going on for years. And, you know, and Hitler capitalized on that, too.
Sure he did,
you
know, yeah.
That's what the Holocaust was all about.
Well, you know. I think that if you ever, I swear, maybe this is the year I'll do it, that I'm going to get it and read it on the air. There's one page. Do you ever read? You probably never even heard of it, much less read it. The Sovereign State of ITT. ITT was like the first big conglomerate, right?
The first big phone company, you mean? ITT?
Yeah, International Telephone and Telegraph. They laid a lot of the telegraph lines in the ocean and all that stuff.
Right.
But they ended up being this huge conglomerate where they owned like everything. And the guy who was in charge of it was a guy named Harold Janine. And he had a page in there where they was like what was going on in his mind, and it was how these countries are just a bunch of bumblebleeps, and big guys like him, the new international markets, they had to put up with, you know, the U.S. government, the British government, and how they really needed them pretty much denutted, and guys like him should really run the world because it was all business, it was all economics, it was all other stuff. And I tell you what, it doesn't seem too far from Musk or Bezos or any of these other people. From what they, you know, they obviously think governments are a bother. I mean, just from their actions. I mean, I never talked to them, but, I mean, right? I mean,
no, you're absolutely right. And so, I don't know. it's a very complicated world now, and it gets more complicated every day. And
how does another question, Kevin? I'll let you ask Mike some questions too, but. How is it that the Houthis not only are getting missiles, but the expertise to lob them towards Israel? I mean, I thought those guys were running around in open boats trying to take over.
No, they've probably been getting trained by the Iranians for years. So, I mean, someone in Yemen, I'm not sure whether it was Houthis, but I think it was, whoever attacked the USS Cole, and Lou and some of the other folks might know better than me. But, you know, there's been always this significant presence of Iranians to train the Houthis, because the Houthis are against the Saudis, so it gets into the Shia-Sunni conflict there also. You know, that the Iranians want to keep pushing the Shia crescent farther west, I guess it would be, not east, but west in that respect.
What, and I don't expect to have it on the top of your head, but can a fighter jet get from Israel to Yemen without refueling? Because they don't have refueling capability, do they? Or do they?
The Israelis?
Yeah.
I would bet they have refueling capability.
Okay,
and I'll bet you somehow they can get directly to Yemen by the Jordanians might let them, or the Jordanians might not do anything to them. Now Syria is ungoverned space, so I doubt anybody's going to knock them down from Syria. Before, when Assad was in power, he might have had some troops that might have been able to, or air defense systems that might have been able to knock down jets. But now I'm sure, well, I'm not sure who's controlling, well, no one's controlling the former Syrian ground forces now, or probably some general officers might be controlling it. So,
what's the range of like an F-18 without more gas?
I have no idea, Tom. That's a loose question.
What's your assessment of the if we went over to visit Syria today? What would we find?
Oh, I think it would be a mess. There's supposedly 2,000 U.S. troops there. The Turks are in there. You have various, you know, Syria also has a substantial presence of Kurds. And so Turks, Kurds. And then you've got the ISIS-type groups. It's not called that anymore. It could be the Islamic Jihad. I'm not sure who it was. But there's one prominent guy that has figured in, and he's the leader of the group right now, and I haven't read anything about it recently, but you know, 2 weeks ago I forget what the guy's name was, but he's in charge of his particular militia, and that's right now he has a limited probably space that he's able to operate in. So essentially, it's ungoverned space.
Do you think he's going to have the ability to expand and push the other guys? When I ask this stupid question, to me it seems very bizarre. What exactly do our 2,000 people over there do all day?
They were probably trying to keep the Turks from hurting, whether it's Syrian Kurds or the Syrian armed forces. Whatever Syrians are supporting us, the 2,000 are probably helping that, but they're also there to protect whatever assets we may have there and to be able to go quickly into Iraq to protect our assets there too. I mean, we have staging logistic bases, I think, now in Syria also, but so do the Iranians, for instance. The Iranians were using a major airfield in Damascus as a staging area to get stuff to Hezbollah and other people.
And what do you just kind of wait around all day and hope you don't get shot at?
Well, that was the issue. But, you know, some of the statements from our current administration, you know, they forgot that they had troops. Well, they neglected to say that they had troops in Syria, essentially kind of waging a quiet war against whether it was Assad's forces, Turkish forces. We're just trying to keep the peace, what peace there was.
Is there any chance this guy is in there now? Is going to get strong enough to essentially run the whole place?
No, I don't think so, but it's way too early to say that. I don't think he has enough forces to do it, but he could consolidate and things like that. But I really, he's a kind of a, whether it's a mid-range militia leader or not, but I don't think he has enough oomph to pull it off.
And he's not backed by Iran or anybody, so that's kind of a problem.
Well, he might end up being backed by Iran, and then he gets some power. So it's just like the Houthis. You know, they started out small, but then Iran knew, okay, I'm going to just keep a thorn in the side of the Saudis. So, and the Houthis are a thorn in the side of the Saudis.
I think we have a couple of guys still at Guantanamo that came from Yemen that are guilty of nothing, that we can't send them back there because A, they don't want to go, and B, I don't think the people in Yemen want them back.
Well, that could very well be, and you know, Guantanamo is another situation that, I think it started under the Obama administration to try and cut back on the number of folks there, and you know, Biden, well, and whether and Trump probably got rid of quite a few, and then. And then Biden's got rid of quite, I think it's below 10 now that might be in Gitmo. I might be wrong about that.
We had a gentleman on the show before you listened. Actually, Kathy Durbin was big friends with the guy's wife. And he's a lawyer from Virginia or Maryland, one of the two, because they were death penalty cases. You had to have been involved in a death penalty case to be one of the guy's attorneys, right?
Right.
And he would come, he was on twice, and the stories were something, you'd swear a guy was spinning a tale from Mars. He goes, we know that there's like 10 people down there that are like really bad guys. And I think it was like 15 or 20 people down there that we know didn't do anything. They never were in Interpol, they just were on the wrong street at the wrong time. But nobody wants them. The people here, politically, you can't let them go, because people here are convinced they're terrorists even though they're not.
Tom, it's very difficult to keep the identities straight because there's a lot of the same names being used,
right.
and the biometrics are affiliated with many people of the same name. So it does get, I keep making excuses, but it does get very complicated. So.
But when we found a guy that we knew was, had a pretty good idea and probably were right, was one of the guilty parties, we kind of gathered up everybody in a block at one point. But I said, so what do these guys do? They know they're innocent, so what do they do, like work at the base? He goes, no, there's no place for them except their cell. They're still in their cell, even though they didn't do anything.
Well, I'm not sure, but we probably have MPs still there guarding them.
Yeah, so. Because we do. There are some guys there that are that still have never had a trial, but that we think are really bad guys.
Right.
But the number, like you say, is down. But the weird part, Mike, is they would get on a once a month or every 2 months, they'd all get on a 737 out of Washington. The judges, the lawyers, and everybody, they'd all pile on there, and they'd get on there. And he said, for the first few times he was there, there was like no place to stay. There wasn't even a bar. So finally, they got all these containers and made these containers. They poked the hole and put an air conditioner in there, and the container was like a hotel room. And finally, he said, you had a bar at least. So, because you went down there for like 3 days, and you
right.
and you'd continue everybody for 2 months, you come back in 2 months. It was unbelievable. You never were going to try the guys that you needed to, and you wouldn't let the guys go that you knew needed to let go. He goes, ever since he finally quit.
Well, it's cruel and inhumane punishment is, you know, not supposedly the American way. So.
Well, but it's not America. It's Guantanamo, right?
Well, but.
You know, a lot of people feel that way.
But we're controlling the base, so
yes.
In a way, it is American territory.
Well, I agree with you, but I'm saying...
Yeah, I know.
I mean, what was that, 23 years ago now? 24? 9/11/01, right?
Yep, so it's more than 23 years ago.
And you're in jail, you didn't do anything. But what did Mike Tyson say, 3 hats and a cat? I mean, at least you get that, right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
But I guess
and they get some exercise, too. So.
Oh, God. So, Kevin, what do you have to say for this piling into the new year here?
Oh, happy new year, everybody. I'm just kind of interesting to see how this unfolds this year. It's going to be a radical change from the Biden administration, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. We've talked a lot about the economic time bomb that's hanging out there. So, make some popcorn, sit back and watch.
Mike, one question, and we'll go back to the U.S. steel issue. If the U.S. wants to build, you know, 3 more aircraft carriers or 3 cruisers, or whatever, actually, somebody sent me something yesterday that there's 61 ships under construction of various kinds all over the place.
In the United States?
Yeah, is that a lot? Or the U.S. Navy has 61 ships under construction. Is that a lot or a little? But if you're the steel manufacturer, do you know that for the next 4 or 5 years you're going to be delivering this much stuff and how much you're going to get paid for? You probably do, don't you?
You probably have some idea, but, you know, once again, it comes back to what you were talking about. It's government contracts, so government contracts might not go to the highest bidder. They might go to some crony of a governor or the whatever. So it just remains to be seen how the defense industries develop, and I keep going back to a complicated world. And, you know, as Kevin just said, this will be a very interesting year because there's a lot, and the Republicans have a tendency to shoot themselves in the foot. So I want to see how the first big deal is the speaker. You know, will they be able to keep Johnson in, or will there be somebody else? So we'll see.
Well, what do you make
of that? That'll be protracted, though. I don't see.
Yeah, but they got to do something, Kevin, to certify the election results. So.
Yeah.
Well, what?
So they have to vote on speaker before they can vote to certify the election results. It's going to be crazy.
Yep.
There's no room for a defector. So, is Johnson going to be able to be popular enough to get a unanimous vote from the Republicans? Or maybe we can have Hakeem Jeffries, back to certify the election.
Well, I mean, that could very well happen. That would be ironic to have, or it would be even more ironic to have Kamala Harris certify the election, being the deciding vote or non-vote, whatever.
In terms of the politics and the fact that a lot of people believe a lot of stuff about Trump, and I wouldn't necessarily get into that, but I've got 2 or 3 things in my core where people have written in, now that we voted Trump in, how soon are inflation, this price, these prices, how soon is all this going to get fixed? I'm sitting there, what's the IQ of this guy? I mean, for God's sake. I mean, I guess my, how much, not that we've listened to or whatever, even you guys are more supporters, but still, I mean, he's my president too. How much has he promised that he can't deliver, and how long of a leash are people going to give him? I mean, he can't cut taxes as broke as we are. I mean, that's off the table.
Not necessarily. Laffer, you know, the Laffer theory about, you know, you cut taxes, you get more revenue. He's going to go by that.
The Mike Murphy that used to walk the economics class knows that's the biggest crack of shit that ever walked.
Well, whether it is or not, Tom, sometimes they have data to back it up. So, the whole thing, sometimes it's laughable, the Biden administration with their Inflation Reduction Act, that certainly didn't reduce inflation. So, the irony in all of these things is, and how many times has Trump declared bankruptcy? So he's now essentially making the country bankrupt. Well, not just him, but all the administrations since probably Clinton. So.
Oh, I think you got to go back to Bush.
Well, I just
all
did.
Right, you got to go back to way back.
Yeah. Yeah. When they put the Iraq War on the credit card. Well, we kind of did it in Vietnam too, right? And it was Democrats.
Yep.
But
it,
you do
the bankruptcy thing with Trump doesn't, that doesn't freak me out very much, because that's just standard practice in commercial real estate development.
Right.
Everything becomes a project, and each project gets incorporated, and when it doesn't go well, then you bankrupt it and walk away, cut your losses, walk away. That's pretty normal for real estate developers. And it's similar to what you see with venture capitalists who will go buy distressed companies, and then some of them they can turn around and some of them they can't, and so you're going to bankrupt some of those. That's nature of the business, so that part doesn't bother me so much. Trump does use a lot, yes, he is all about using leverage to and other people's money to finance things, but so that part doesn't bother me. But I never saw in his first term any kind of disciplined approach to spending. I'm interested to see what the DOGE initiative does. It's not going to solve the biggest problem that we have. Not even talking about touching it, and that's all the healthcare related stuff. But it could be interesting from starting to initiate a different view of how government is supposed to operate at the administrative level, so that it has potential to be impactful. I just don't know that it will be successful, and that's one of those sit back and watch things that I mentioned. So I think those will be interesting. As far as taxes, I don't envision a cut, but I do envision a renewal of the tax cuts from Trump's first administration. I can't imagine that they wouldn't do that much. They're just not going to let all of that expire and then have people's taxes go up. So I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you don't think he's? I don't think he is. You don't think he's dumb enough to actually think these tariffs are going to be his sneaky way to raise taxes and have people be stupid enough to think?
Tariffs are a bargaining chip for him.
Right, and this all this nonsense about Greenland and the Panama Canal, those are all bargaining chips too. And the other thing that I haven't heard, and I'm sure Kevin, you probably have seen it somewhere, what happened to the Monroe Doctrine? We're letting the Chinese into the Panama Canal, whatever that's going on there, the Russians. We used to have the Monroe Doctrine and
EV manufacturing in Mexico, all of those kinds of things.
And
those are all on the agenda. And so, I think it's starting with the outrageous, and then they're going to see with the outrageous bluster, and we'll see if it lands anywhere. I don't know. I don't know what to expect.
When do you think, and this is not a, this is a combined issue, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this with Carl. I don't know, Mike, if you heard, if you look at the labor numbers. There's two things you got to, you know, I think you need to look at when you look at the health of the economy. The if you look at the labor numbers, all we've really done in the last two or three years, and Kevin, I think, would agree with me on this for once in his life, all we're doing is having more people working two jobs. If you look at the household survey, we have 700,000 less people, or is it 7? I'll dig it up. We have less people working than we did a year ago. And if you look at the establishment survey, we got 2 million more working. And the only difference between the two is one counts you once if you're working, the other counts you two or three times if you have three jobs. And that's a this labor health thing, dropping under 60% of people working is an enormous problem in terms of who gets to pay, how many people are paying for the people who don't work, and whatever else. The other one is, if everybody, you know, is convinced the economy has been terrific. It was terrific under Trump. Well, no, it wasn't. We had COVID. That's not his fault. I mean, I'm not going to blame him for that. Then this guy, the economy has been spectacular. We came out of it. Kevin's right. They could have left it alone. The fact is, the first 2 months of this year, the receipts to the federal government on taxes are less than last year. Well, if the economy is growing, how the bleep are tax receipts less? There's no way that can be, in my opinion. I mean, you could have a timing issue, but if it happens in a third month or a fourth, how is that not a problem? And when are we at least going to come to grips with our consumer price index is wrong, our labor numbers are wrong, and oh, by the way, it's not doing so hot if we're taking in less money than we did last year. Are we going to ever come to Jesus meeting about this? How do you...
It has all the appearances of exactly. It's actually a Goodhart's law thing, where you're saying, the statistic itself is becoming a target, and so we're totally managing the statistics rather than the underlying activities that yield statistics, and that I think that's a big problem. You can't run a business that way. So I'm a big. I absolutely believe you have, data is really important, and you have to orient everybody towards the relevant data that comes into play. But it's there as a measure of the effectiveness of your activities rather than there as a measure in and of itself. And it sounds like splitting hairs, but it's a really important concept. It is all about, identifying your problem areas so that you can address them, not so that you can mask them.
Well, if your people keep telling you you're doing good and it's all a lie, what good is it?
Well, that's the point, Tom. There was just, you're making an extremely valid point. The people are lying. The bureaucrats are lying to their leadership, and that's something that should not be tolerated. And here again, the Doge thing comes up, and the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, and Carl, and you know this much better than I do, but there's a lot of lying being done internal to the government to convince the leadership that they're doing the right thing.
And if leadership is dumb enough to buy it without asking the right questions, then we're screwed.
Mike, since you brought up, we'll steal a minute of Carl's time. Since you brought up, your mom, I believe, used to help the CPI group out in surveying some
stuff.
Yes,
that's right, Tom. She did the surveys in the Cleveland area for the Bureau of Labor and Statistics.
Right, so there's the lovely Mrs. Murphy, who I met and really liked, and then you've got the president. How many desks do those numbers go through, and at what desk does somebody have the balls to say, I'm changing the numbers? It's got to come from it. There's no... If you're in charge of anything, I mean... my brother Dan does all the accounting and stuff for PTI. He doesn't have to tell me what the numbers are. I know. Right? I mean, if he came to me and said, boy, we made $200,000 last month, I'd go, I think you better check your math. I mean, you shouldn't be able to bamboozle somebody in charge, because somebody in charge is supposed to have his finger on the pulse of the place.
Well, the problem with probably the United States, and all, it's just too big. It's become too cumbersome. And now, once again, I'm making excuses.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear what Carl has to say. So
But even if Biden or Trump watches TV, and they get a CPI number that comes in at 0.2%, and you got somebody on TV saying, gee, they just yanked up the price of Ford pickups last month like 5%. He's going to go, wait a minute.
That doesn't make sense,
those guys should have some kind of an idea. Even if you're behind the screened-in limousine window, you have to have some kind of an outside view to have an idea if these numbers are any good or not.
Well, and in many cases, they don't. And certainly, you know, Biden, I don't know if he had any touch with common people or not, but he certainly was just oblivious to everything over the last few years. So, you know, that's probably a bad example. But for the most part, they are so removed from the average person so that when someone says, hey, the inflation number is looking great, and you and I are sitting there going, that's a load of crap. They don't look so good to me.
But I gotta believe either one of them, Kevin. We've taken the last two guys. They have to take a look at the monthly Treasury statement, for God's sake. Of all the pieces of paper they need to look at, and after two or three months, Trump or Biden or who, God knows, even Harris would say, wait a minute, if we're doing so good, how come our receipts are down? I mean, you'd hope that anybody at that level has at least that knowledge of the numbers.
You know, I certainly would expect Trump to do it because he has to have been looking at, you know, numbers and financial statements his whole life.
Yeah.
You know, Biden and Harris, I don't know what the hell they've been looking at.
Harris might not know, you know. I mean, and Biden might not care. I don't know, but I mean, talk about a number, you would think, God, we have a great economy this year. One thing's for sure is our tax receipts should be up. Oops, they're not. Well, duh.
Well, but Tom, you keep talking about the great economy, and you beat this drum. You know, the money supply keeps going up, so the economy keeps going up. So, you know, how true is that when you keep increasing the money supply, and then
I agree,
the inflation just keeps increasing.
Well, even I'm stunned that the receipts, tax receipts, are less than last year. I find it very hard to believe. It must mean things are way worse than even we think they are.
Well,
anyway, happy New Year, guys. Kevin, you might pile in on Monday, maybe. We got to talk more some football and sports. Mike, did you say your son is back over in Germany?
Yes, he's in Stuttgart till at least next October time frame, he and his family.
Is that a huge base? Is that where you were?
No, I was never at Stuttgart. Yeah, there's a big presence there. They have three or four garrisons or posts, whatever. And there's two major commands there. There's AFRICOM and there's EUCOM. EUCOM is headquartered at Patch Barracks. All of this is public knowledge. AFRICOM is headquartered at Kelly Barracks. And then there's different housing areas for the troops that are there, the soldiers and sailors and airmen that are stationed there.
Are the amount of people in Germany for a while were starting to come down? Are they creeping back up or at least staying steady now?
No, they're probably steady. I'm not sure what it was. When I was there, what do you call it? General Bell and then guys after him, they wanted to get below 30,000. I bet you now they're below 10,000 or around 10,000. Yeah.
So
maybe with the pennants it's 10,000 to 20,000, but
so it hasn't creeped back up that much with the Ukraine.
No, it hasn't creeped back. They keep cutting forces in Germany because the goal is, and eventually we'll, you know, I think we will, they call them launching pads or lily pads. We rotate troops in and out of Poland. We're rotating troops in and out of the Baltics, but no families or very few families are going with them. So that way you keep your forward presence light and you're able to fight without the families around. So.
What's the furthest you send somebody without a family? 6 months?
No, unaccompanied tours can be up to a year.
Wow,
that's usually what they are.
That's a long stretch for a family.
Well, and the Navy guys, you know, they get to, it's either a 6 month cruise or sometimes their cruises get extended. So that's the Navy and the Marines. Air Force does a much better job of handling deployments because they do it quick and clean, not quick and dirty.
You ever hear Hale's stories about he said out of all the different armed forces, nothing's like being in the Navy if you're at sea, because you're doing something every minute, 4 hours.
Oh yeah, sleep, every time
something's breaking, something's doing something. I mean, it's
right.
Well, he was a nuclear engineer guy and had been a nuclear cruiser, so he said he never wanted to be on a submarine, but he was a nuclear guy. So there, I guess there were a couple of nuclear cruisers back then. I don't know if there are anymore, but I guess he'd be out.
Well, there probably still are, but who knows? You know, yeah. I don't know that. Yeah.
Well, guys, Happy New Year. If I don't talk to you, but I will. Of course, I'll call and wish you that. SP Futures down 22.
We'll have the thread going during the game, and go Irish, and Happy New Year to both of you.
Okay. Yeah, that game's late. Are we going to be able to stay up? We got to start setting alarms for each other or something. That thing's going to
go
to midnight.
Or we have to take a nap because it's the 8 o'clock game, and I got to work.
It's 9 by
days.
You. Is it 9 by you?
No, so it'll probably start between 8 and 9 by me.
Okay.
Probably 8:15 or so.
You know, it's funny if you get people like Jan Short was thinking of going down there. I go, Jan, you go down there, at least when we went down there in 73 when we won. Now you got two more games. Now what are you going to do? Go to two other? How do they expect? I'm sure nobody cares because we're a studio audience. How do you expect a normal, even a fairly wealthy alumni guy or lady to go to four different cities at four different dates?
Well, you got to pick your poison, Tom. So, and as I said yesterday, my poison will be the Orange Bowl if both Penn State and Notre Dame make it.
So that would be the final game, or is that the game?
No,
before?
No, that's a semifinal. So,
all right. So then somebody there would have to play Oregon, probably, or somebody.
Exactly. Yep.
But you know, how good do you think this Oregon team is? Are they the best team money could buy? Are they that good? It looked like they
Who knows? You know, they beat Ohio State in a close game out in Oregon. So for that week, they were the best team. But Ohio State has a tendency not to Ryan Day, unfortunately, has a tendency not to win the big games. So we'll see how it works out.
All right.
And next time, and to me, it's ironic because the Rose Bowl is, you know, an old Pac-10 team, old Big Ten team, but they're now in the same conference and they knock each other off to go on into the college football playoffs.
Well, they tried to keep some semblance of the old bowl thing. That's why George is playing in the Sugar Bowl, right?
Right, but Texas and Arizona State in the Peach Bowl, would have been a logical location for Georgia because that's a home game for Georgia. So.
Well, but the SEC goes to the Sugar Bowl. I would have thought the Texas would be in the Cotton Bowl.
Well, I actually think the Cotton Bowl is one of the later games.
Maybe.
And so, you know, that'll be one of those, you know, the two semifinalists and then a final game.
Plus, the Cotton Bowl is no longer the Cotton Bowl. It's Texas Stadium. It's Cowboy Stadium.
Yeah, I think you're right.
They call
about
it the
that.
Cotton Bowl, though.
Yeah, but and that's it's still called the Cotton Bowl. So,
but they actually,
what Kevin said.
Not the stadium.
If you make the tour down there, which I did, there actually is the Cotton Bowl people. They've officially moved the big office with all the different plays, including the Joe Montana play and all those plays. They're all on the wall. They moved all those walls with all that stuff are now in Dallas Stadium.
Okay. In the current, what is it called, the AT&T Stadium still?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, okay.
So you
well,
see
Jerry Jones is a masterful guy. I mean, yeah. He knows what he wants, and he gets it.
Well, I was listening to this game last night. It was the Rate game. I'm like, who the hell? Turns out Guaranteed Rate is now Rate, and Sox Field is now Rate Field, not even Guaranteed Rate Field.
Yeah, well, I saw the other day when the Steelers were playing the Chiefs, Acrisure, and I have no idea what Acrisure is, but it was Acrisure Field. So,
well, the first bowl game was Scooter Coffee. Who the hell is Scooter Coffee?
and the minor Bowls continue to seem to do okay.
But nobody in the upper deck. Got to keep that camera low.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Take care, guys. SP Futures
right.
down 23.
Right to Carl.
SP 20 down 23. NASA Futures down 89. We'll go right to Carl. Carl, how are you, bud?
Well, you know, I'm doing fine.
I was thinking about you the other night, believe it or not.
Oh, no.
Yes. And you've talked, I mean, with the COVID stuff, and you've obviously talked an awful lot about the ventilators and all that stuff with my cousin's 90th birthday. And his running buddy that lived on the same block when they grew up, real nice guy. They've been friends for, I'm going to say, 85 years, maybe more. he was one of these guys at his age. He was on a ventilator, I think, for maybe 10 days. He was totally given up, and there he is, walking along, feeling fine. Talk about tough old boy from the South Side, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, he's a lucky SOB.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so,
but I mean, I couldn't believe it. He goes, yeah, I was on a ventilator for like more than a week. I go, wow.
Yeah, he's a lucky bastard. He's alive. I mean, especially if they stuffed him full of remdesivir.
Yeah, well, I think they gave him, and somehow he just refused to go down, basically.
Well, you know, I had an aunt that kidney failure finally got her, and the thing around the family was that she was just so mean and grizzled, even though she was this mousy little chick. She was the last person you ever wanted to screw with. Oh, man, were you in trouble if you did. And it was a, she's just so mean that not even the devil wants her.
God.
But, you know, it's so... the thing that I find so fascinating about the last few days, Vivek and Elon have really stepped on their own wiener, and I think there's an argument to be made that with the incoming Trump administration, they just blew their own wieners off. Okay, they literally shot it off. This thing got started over the last couple of days about the H-1B abuses.
Which ones?
H-1B visas.
Okay. Oh yeah. Okay.
Okay, now this is something. All right, so here are the basic facts from Census. Okay, there are twice as many STEM graduates in this country with degrees as there are STEM jobs in total in the United States. So any claim that we do not have enough people in the U.S. to fill those jobs is just a lie.
Now, what do you mean what do you mean by STEM degrees and STEM jobs?
Science, technology,
okay.
Engineering, math. Okay, so if you look at, I mean, you know, one of the things that the BLS does and Census is keep track of labor, right? That's part of their job. That's literally the report that we get every month, right? And there is the ACS, which is, you know, that long form thing. You and I have talked about this before. You know, you've gotten one in the mail. I've gotten one in the mail before. You know, that 40-page monster that they send you. They have there's sampling error in all surveys, of course, but they have a great deal of data, and that data, I mean, you know, X sampling error. When you have twice as much of a supply of something as the total amount of aggregate demand in the economy, anyone that tries to claim that there's a shortage is lying. All right.
Well, there could be spot shortages. Everybody wants to live in Silicon Valley or someplace. I mean,
well, of course there is. But the point is that if the argument is there aren't enough smart people who we could train to do these jobs, that's just BS. It's a lie. All right. What there is the classic mismatch in supply and demand is always resolved by price, right? I mean, this is the basics of economics. First semester economics class. An imbalance in those things is always resolved by price. So what do you do if you're an industry person and you don't like the price? You try to find some way to increase the supply. Duh. All right. So the law on H-1Bs is that you are not allowed to use them until and unless you, number one, pay above the market rate, and number two, you first have to make a diligent attempt to hire an American. Having failed at both of those things, you now can use H-1 labor, okay? The problem with this is that, and this has been going on for a long time, right? I've been hollering about it for at least the last 15 years, maybe more. I can spot these ads instantly because I've been in the technology fields literally my entire working life, okay, close to 45 years now. And you see these ads, 5 years of experience, and then they list a whole bunch of different programming languages and disciplines. Absolutely nobody actually has that experience list. No one. There's not a single person in this country that has it. However, there is an H-1B person through a contract house that claims to have it. Now, the claim is false. However, having run the ad and gotten no responses that meet the criteria, they now turn around and they do this. And the basic problem you have with H-1 labor is that if you're here on an H-1 visa, your job is tied to your employer. If you leave to go work for somebody
else... The first ones you were talking about are the same as the ones we've always talked about before, the ones where you come here and you're tied to the employer. Now, those guys, they're always going to be paid less than market, I would think.
Well, duh.
Yeah.
Because, and by the way, they're going to be subjected to ridiculously abusive working conditions because they can't leave and go somewhere else. Okay? So, now... Here's what ends up happening, though, in the marketplace, right? Besides the fact that, of course, this depresses the cost of labor for the tech companies that, you know, which they like, right? But here's the other problem. And I happen to know a couple of people personally who went through this grinder, right? There's the, you know, you've got Vivek out there basically saying that, well, you know, the problem is that we honor sports teams more than we honor, you know, someone putting their nose down and studying calculus. All right, let me point out a couple of things to people like Vivek. Number one, Vivek made all of his money, all of it, literally, by taking a failed drug that he bought from GSK for Alzheimer's disease, which, by the way, that entire field of drug research has been riven through with fraud for 2 decades.
Oh, yeah.
That has now been proved. Okay, we've talked about that on the show before. He bought a failed drug that had failed 4 times. GSK had been trying to get it through. It had never made it past phase 2. It had failed trials either in phase 1 or phase 2 in all of the attempts. He bought the drug for peanuts. I think his organization paid like $5 million for it. Which I mean, you know, that's nothing, right? I mean, it costs
There's a lot of drugs out there looking for disease, right?
Well, this one was originally developed for Alzheimer's. Okay. But it didn't work. He turned around, repackaged it. And this was in the 2015 timeframe. Took the company public, sold into the ramp, okay, managed to grab $2 billion for himself. This is where all of his money came from. And then puts the drug through another trial. It, of course, fails again, right? I mean, it's already failed 4 times. Why would you think it would work the fifth time?
But I don't really want to know the answer to this, but how did he get the ability to sell the stock that quickly? What kind of board did he have? P&P?
Well, I don't know. I don't know all the internal.
But I mean, you hear about it once a quarter that somebody has some company that on the way up, when everybody thought it was a big winner, the guy sold all his stock and it turned out to be a loser and everybody else lost. I mean, you hear that happen several times a year, and this is just another one of those things.
Yeah, this is just another one of those. And so, but the thing is that the reason I hold the opinion that the man is just a grifter and a fraud is that he didn't discover this drug and think it worked. He bought it knowing it had failed.
What was the...
Now, I don't know how the hell he got away with this without going to jail. Okay, but, well, yeah, I do. Nobody goes to jail in the United States anymore.
Had cancer and eventually died from it. Somewhere along the way when she was doing the chemo and stuff, there was a... This has to be 16, 17 years ago. She's been dead 17 years, maybe. And there was a drug, an Aston? Was that the name of the stuff that was... They said we can give you this and it'll extend your life, but it's $2,000 a week. This is, you know, 17 years ago. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, but it won't do anything. And then it won't actually stop it.
She goes, well, how long will it help? And she goes, you'll live like 2 weeks longer. She goes, why would I do that? But that was one. It was not supposed to be a cancer drug. It was some other kind of drug, and this was like the third disease they were trying to, you know, to pin it.
Chief, this was the whole reason that I was keyed up on all the COVID stuff was because Dendreon was this little biotech company right around the time of the crash, okay, the 08 blow up, right?
Yep.
And I found these guys. They claimed they had found the cure for metastatic prostate cancer. Now, if you think about that, if they had been right, oh my God, you want to talk about that is the blockbuster of all blockbusters, right? Because if you cut open the average 80-year-old guy that dies of a heart attack, he has prostate cancer. It doesn't kill him. but essentially every single man that lives long enough has the disease. It's just that something else gets you first. So, and in some small percentage of men, it gets aggressive and it whacks you, okay? Well, these guys believed that what they were selling was that they had the answer to this, and it was a customized therapy. They took your blood out, they processed it, and then, you know, then injected it back into you. Extremely expensive. Well, as it turns out, when as I started going through the data, I said this doesn't work. Okay, it temporarily, you know, a little bit. Well, as it turns out, what it got you when the trials actually were published, 4 months. Okay, on average. Now, of course, there were outliers, people that got much better results, but the statistical value of it was 4 months, and it was like $100 or $200,000 or something like this. So, I mean, this was, you know, this was something that when you look at this, it was $300,000 for another, you know, per year of extended life, right? And then there was a huge fight with Medicare because Medicare refused to pay for it. And you know, essentially the entire thing blew up in everyone's face.
That whole thing about those trials is somewhat weird. Dr. J, my buddy, his brother Paul, who I think was one of the nicest people I've ever met, he played linebacker for Cal, and he ends up with Lou Gehrig's disease, right?
Right.
And he's going through some of these trials, and you know, kind of none of them work. All of a sudden, he's in one where statistically it didn't work, but it really was helping him.
Well, that's, but I mean, Chief, that's true for.
Well, but then they said, well, can we get the drugs on our own? They like destroy them all.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, here's, I mean, Dendrion ended up at, I mean, last trade on it before it blew up completely was 11 cents.
That's a number.
Okay. Well, and by the way, the stock traded up to close to 60 on the hype. So yeah, so people got it in the back door, right? That,
yep.
You know, that bought into that. Well, you know, Vivek's entire fortune was made essentially pulling the same crap. The difference was that Dendrion actually, I mean, this was the first crack for them. They actually believed it worked. This guy had every reason to believe it didn't work and did it anyway. So now what we've got is he comes up on X and basically says, you guys are a bunch of slackers that like to watch porn and play football instead of grinding and, you know, doing this. Look, the reality of it is this. Grinding will never surface a single genius. All right, that's the model that the Chinese have and the North Korea and the South Koreans, that with the pressure they put on their kids, it never works. And the reason is this: you can't develop that which isn't there, right? All right.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever you start with is all there is. The smarter you are, the more likely you are to resent somebody stepping on you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week as a young person. And eventually, if you get mad enough, you'll find ways to throw sabot into the gears and screw the guy who's doing it, whether it's your parents or whoever else. All right. Now, when you look at the great discoveries that have driven all of the things that we enjoy in the world, they've all come from people who didn't do it that way. All right, the Edisons, the Westinghouses, you know, all of that stuff, right? Carrier. These people all were essentially unleashed, unchained, went off and did their own thing and came up with some. I mean, look at Salk, okay? Salk didn't grind.
But most of these guys, when I say most, a lot of them were just more observant than other people. And they saw something kind of randomly or naturally happening and they go, wait a minute, that's interesting. What if I could apply it to this?
And they chased it,
yeah.
Right. But the thing is that we, so, you know, throughout history, throughout human history, the way that this has worked has been that we used to have this patronage system, not the bad kind of patronage, the good kind. Very wealthy people basically took people that they thought were extraordinary in some way, put them in a room and said, go do your own thing, okay? And that's how we ended up with most of the great artworks, the works of art, that we, you know, that we currently look at and go, oh my God, you know, and also, you know, Galileo, Copernicus, all right, I mean, all these things, right? And yet, that's because those people didn't. There was no grind. There was no sitting on people. Edison was the same way. Edison was just fascinated with the concept of an electric light bulb. All right, there wasn't anybody pushing him to, you know,
figure out how the damn thing works. Make it not burn out. All right, but I mean, he was, you know, and he said, you know, his famous thing was is that, you know, invention is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. But nobody was stepping on his neck. And so the problem you have with this is that when you step on people's necks, which is what H-1B essentially is, back to where I was saying, the two people I know who were teenagers back when I used to live in Florida, and they are both extremely bright people, and I won't put in too much detail because it might actually out who they are, which I do not want to do. But they both asked me about getting into STEM computer-related things, technology and engineering, because, of course, they knew what I did and how I made my money. And I said, look, the danger you have here is that if you go into an engineering school and you take on $100,000, $200,000 worth of debt, your job gets offshored, because this was after Disney had basically screwed everybody in their IT department for H-1s and forced them to train their replacements or get no severance.
Great.
This was after this had happened, okay, which is one of the, I mean, you're talking about tens of thousands of people that got screwed. And I said, look, the danger with this is you go into debt $100,000 to get that degree, and then you have that done to you, and you will be flogged for the rest of your life for that money and have absolutely no way to make a reasonable return on the investment. I said, so the key is that if you love this stuff and you're really into it, that's great. That's what you want to do. You want to pick something that doesn't feel like work if you can. Some people can't, that's fine. But if you can, pick something that doesn't feel like work, I said. But the problem is, do not get beyond your own capacity to actually get it without being in debt. So if something goes wrong, you're not hosed. You're not financially destroyed.
Carol, how come nobody other than maybe the...
Well, here's the thing, though, Chief. They managed to do it, okay? They both got very close to free rides from top engineering schools, okay? One of them was actually from, like, in the top five in the world, all right? Graduate with high honors. Today, neither one of them works in a tech field. One of them has a permanent heterosexual relationship that I know of. Travels the world as part of a dance troupe, makes enough money to enjoy life, and he and his girlfriend do that for a living. And they have also, neither one of them has and likely never will produce any children, and they have stuck the middle finger up to people like Vivek, who have said, you want to screw us? You can't make me use my brain.
I'm still having trouble getting over the part where his alternate career was in dance. I don't think mine was ever there.
Well, you know what? He's really good at it, obviously. All right? And so
ask Audrey someday about my dancing prowess. Ugh.
I'm saying he and his partner are obviously very good at it because people are willing to pay him to do it. Okay? So, I mean, this is, you know, there's... But the point is, all of the intellectual chops this guy has, and seriously... This dude is in my category, maybe better, maybe considerably better. I would believe he could build a lunar lander, or at least engineer it, maybe not actually construct it, but engineer it and get it up there, and it would work.
Well, hey, did you check this, not to switch topics on you, but I somehow still have a belief that some of these guys have somewhat of a brain cell working. I thought for sure our increase... It was happening every month, and the money supply would tone down this month. It's higher. Did you see this?
Yeah, and you know, the thing is what we haven't seen yet, and we won't get it until the second week of January, is the monthly MTS from December.
But I got us on a 7.6% annual rate now, last month.
Well, the implied inflation rate from the first 2 months of the fiscal is almost 15% inflation.
Well, I mean,
now if it's only 7.6, well, gee, that's a little better, I guess, right? I mean,
well, we've been doing 5.1. I'll get the number here. I'm doing my math here from the beginning of the year. Go back to the January, actually the December number, which would be 11 months. So,
right.
So
let me just put one other thing out here for you on this whole H-1 thing. All right. The argument that you're hearing and that you always hear is that we have to poach the best and brightest from the world because that's one of the things that America has always done. And it's one of the things that makes our country good. All right. Here's the truth, Chief. And people that listen to your show need to hear this and need to understand this because this is a fact. Go online and Google O-1 visa. Okay, O-1. Anyone who is truly a one percenter in a field, any technical field, can come here on an O-1 visa. Now, you have to be able to prove it, that you actually are in that top 1%. So there's no gaming. It's a 3-year infinitely renewable visa. It can form the basis for a green card down the road, which, you know, that's permanent residency and ultimately citizenship. And it is not tied to an employer, which means once you get here, if somebody tries to screw you with working conditions, you can go work for somebody else, or you can even go out and start your own firm, and that's perfectly fine. It has an original 3-year validity. And they are available. There is no quota on them. There's no cap on them. However, you do have to be able to prove it. So if you really are a top 1%, this, by the way, is the visa that's used by, for example, professional golfers that are British and want to, you know, live and play golf with the PGA Tour in America. Because you're in the top 1%. If you're good enough to be a PGA golfer.
Do they still have the one where if you have enough money to start a project here that provides 10 jobs, you get like 6 citizenships for you or your family or something? Is that still around?
There's a bunch of different categories. I don't know if that one still is there. The O-1 also comes with a limited eligibility for direct family members under the O class, but it's got a different number. And I think film and sports is like O2 or something like that. So I mean, it's the O class, but there's a bunch of different subcategories under it.
So Ohtani's going to be a citizen pretty soon if he isn't already.
Well, but that, I mean, you know, that's the thing is that it's now, of course, one of the reasons that the tech bros don't like that as the option is that you can't exploit people under that one. Okay?
If you can't exploit people, it's no good.
Well, I'm just saying, if Apple, you know, says, hey, by the way, you know, we'll pay $150,000 a year, but we want 60 hours a week out of you, all right, and you come over here on the O-1, and then, you know, well, 150, I don't know, you know, Texas Instruments will give me 300. Go to hell, Apple.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, so the thing is that There isn't any way to play that game with the O series visas, and therefore that's not everybody wants the H ones because
if you had $250,000 they'd let you into Canada, right? Was it the Chinese or
anything? Yeah, I think that's though getting locked down because there was a lot of abuse there too. But the other thing that's interesting about the H ones is that the actual applicants and the jobs that are admitted under that, by law, are publicly posted. You have to go dig through their database, but it's there. Okay, so you have companies that have entry-level accounting positions paying $60,000 a year hiring H-1s. You're telling me we don't have any CPAs coming out of school?
Well, I think we do. We got to dash here to break. S&P futures down 25, NASDAQ futures down 95, since we missed our first break. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P Futures down 26. NASDAQ Futures down 101. We had that huge up day earlier in the week, so I don't think we're going to make it down in a week, but we're kind of pushing that way a little bit here. We've got the Dow futures down 169. We've got individual stocks. Actually, we've only got a couple of them that are up. Sherwin-Williams is up, of all things, up $1.72. I still can't get used to that thing being a Dow. We've got Goldman Sachs down 221. We got Microsoft down $1. So nothing crazy, just everything down a little bit. We've got bonds up 2 basis points, 4.6, call it. So it keeps creeping up the 10-year. The Bund up 6 basis points, 2.38. Japan up 2 basis points, 1.11. Wow, they're up to 1.1. I haven't seen that in a while. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 91.4%. FTSE down 1, call that flat. CAC around up 48.3%. So Europe is actually up pretty much across the board. Asia, which was up huge yesterday, today Nikkei is up another 713, well above 40,000. 40,281, it's a full 1.8%. Hang Seng down 7, call that flat. Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Evidently, Tokyo's CPI was okay or something. I don't know. The Japanese market is crazy. I think they're putting a lot of money in the system. Over U.S. yesterday, Dow was up 28, S&P down 2, NASDAQ down 10. And yes, it was that slow. Foreign exchange, the euro is at 104.3. Again, the dollar has been very strong. British pound, 125.6. None of these things are moving much today. But the yen is 157.7. Now, that got down, I think, to 143, which means it got up to 143 because you got to look at the yen the opposite way. Oil up 69 cents, 70.31, back over 70, where it keeps flopping back and forth. Brent up 63 cents, 73.89. Natural gas up 13 cents, 3.85. That's getting up there pretty high. RBOB up a penny, 196. Somebody's looking for a cold winter, but it's going to be 50 here today, so it sure as hell isn't cold here. Gold down 18 bucks, 26.35. It had a good day yesterday. Can't get two in a row. Silver down 44 cents again, under 30, 29.94. And we have Bitcoin up 880, 96,354. Yeah, Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Weather sucked for the Bear games. Bears sucked. Everybody sucked.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 46 degrees right now with a high of 50. Breezy and mild with periods of rain from late morning on. Tonight will be overcast and breezy with a low of 45 degrees. In Phoenix, Arizona, 43 degrees right now with a high of 68. Some clouds, then sunshine. Tonight will be clear with a low of 44 degrees. Let's go to traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 9 minutes. We're looking at 22 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 14 minutes inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 12 minutes inbound Dan Ryan from 95th. Lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan. It's 15 minutes. Let's talk sports. Bears lose to the Seahawks yesterday, 3-6. And this Saturday, December 28th, we got Cardinals at Rams at 7 p.m. NHL, Blackhawks at Sabres today at 6 p.m. And on the NBA, the Bulls lose to the Hawks, 141-133 yesterday. And we got Mavericks at Suns at 8 p.m. today. Back over to you, Chief.
So, Carl, how come you don't have a personality like Ricky? You look out this dark and dismal day and say beautiful Chicago.
Well, I don't know. We've had really interesting weather this holiday. But then again, here's the thing. Everyone screams about, I want a white Christmas, right? And then you look at the climatological data, and I mean, certainly you got better odds of it there than you do here.
Oh, yeah.
you're further north, right? I mean, the rule. It's funny because I lived up in northern Michigan for a fair bit of time. And the rule there was that when you came back from Thanksgiving, you were about even odds that if you drove south, to some southern, more southern place over Thanksgiving, on the way back the day after, there was about even odds that there'd be snow on the ground, which amusingly was... the opening day for deer. So, you'd stuff yourself on turkey and then get your butt up into the North Woods because you could actually track an animal, in the snow, right? of course, the other side of it is you got to freeze your butt off being out there. And that's better from a standpoint of not having the meat go off on you before you, could manage to take care of it if you were lucky enough. The interesting thing about Christmas here is the first year I live here, Christmas Eve, there's a winter storm warning up, And my daughter and her boyfriend at the time were like, well, Dad, you know, we might not come today because we're not feeling so, so great right now. They'd probably been out partying the night before, duh, right, And I said, look, I don't know how serious these guys are because, first winter here. But they're saying there could be 2 feet of snow on the ground by morning.
Wow. So I would come tonight or not at all, because you might not get here if you try to sit on the decision. Well, as it turns out, they weren't lying. For the weather guesser, for once in his life, this is the only job you can have. You could be wrong 95% of the time and not get fired. As it turns out, the weather guesser was not wrong. And when we woke up the next morning, there literally was over a foot of snow on the back deck. So,
you know how many deer got whacked in the 9-day gun season in Wisconsin last year?
No.
Take a guess.
How many humans?
How many deer?
Oh, how many deer? Oh.
10,000? 173,000.
Seriously?
18% fewer than the year before.
Okay, I never paid attention to the actual raw numbers when I used to live up there and go hunt. All I knew was that it was a really good, it was a good thing if you, we're sitting there looking and, hey, there's a buck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Illinois, 158,000.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of people that, that have a serious problem with, with that, but I'll tell you what. Where my parents lived, the discharge of firearms was prohibited, okay, for other than lawful self-defensive purposes, or of course the police. If you rob a bank, the cop can still shoot you. But some idiot, they lived on an island, and some idiot got the bright idea of bringing a male and female deer onto the island. They did what deer would be expected to do. And if you had a garden a couple of years later,
good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with the flowers or the vegetables or whatever it was you were growing, because in the middle of the night, Bambi would come eat them all, and you were prohibited from shooting them.
Well, you still can't shoot them outside the 9-day season.
Well, yeah, but they literally had, like, no season. Finally, they ended up actually paying people to go out there and cull, and I think they still are, because there's, now all of a sudden it's a menace, because you're driving down the road and, you jump out in front of your car and stuff like this, right? I mean, they're not exactly...
Well, in Ogden Dunes, Rodri had her place, and we still have friends down there. One of the biggest schisms in the place was a few years ago, when they decided there were too many deer and they were going to bring people in to cull the herd, and everybody would have signs on their front lawn, no culling, and the next one would say cull the herd, and it tore the place apart for probably 3 years.
Well, there's another kind of funny thing that comes up with all of this, which is rather amusing, which is that we hear today about how the world is such a terrible place and all this climate change caused by cow farts.
Right.
Right. Do you realize that there was something on the order of 20 or 30 million bison on this piece of dirt when Columbus landed?
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Okay. Now, of course, we killed them all. All right.
Well, we almost did.
Well, we tried to kill them all. We almost killed all of them, but we tried to kill them all. And part of that was because that was a food source for the natives that were here, and we were trying to screw with them. And part of it was because they just taste good. And so rather than reasonable practices, kill enough to eat and to make some coats, which is what the natives were doing, no, we tried to kill essentially all of them. How come the temperature didn't collapse and we didn't end up in the glacier?
You can't ever ask questions like that, Carl.
Now we have cows. Well, guess what? The number of cows it tends to be managed to be about the same, because I'd like to eat one. By the way, great standing rib roast over Christmas. Thank you very much for providing that from an animal. However, I am reasonably sure that the rancher, let his bull have some fun, so that there would be another one.
I'll bet you that, well, certainly on dairy farms, there hasn't been a non-artificial insemination in 10 years.
Yeah, it's, you know, the whole thing is just, I mean, it's kind of stupid, right, when you think about it, that we, you know, we have this idea. And now the latest thing flying around, and it's behind a paywall, so I haven't actually been able to read it. But CNN is now warning that there is a new climate catastrophe coming as due to a natural source that, of course, we cannot do anything about because it's natural. And that is a enormous. Remember the huge volcanic eruptions that, you know, there's plenty of record of them happening, you know, Krakatoa, you know, these things, right? Well, but there's indications apparently that, you know, that another one of these things is going to go off.
Well, then you won't have to worry about global warming.
You're going to have to worry about the other problem.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, you know, Hochul out in New York has just signed a bill that is essentially going to fine carbon fuel producers. Well, I got news for you. You know, it was 22 degrees here a couple of days ago when I woke up in the morning. And it was still dark. And there was no wind. It was calm. If I didn't have available natural gas,
yeah, these people are, they may be. What did the famous Star Trek episode with Joan Collins, where she tried to stop World War II and it would change history, and Spock said she had the right idea maybe 300 years too soon or something.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you're a little late. Yeah. Right?
Hey, we've seen a lot of stuff in the last week. We talked some of it about the other day. You know, stuff like tax receipts being down, stuff like, I was just reading something this morning that how many people took on debt over the Christmas, and 44% of them said they had no intention of taking on debt, they just ended up taking on debt.
Well, Ramsey's been screaming about that, and you know, I mean, now there were some things that I bought that were legitimate deals, okay, and I actually completed a transition of my photographic and video equipment that I'd been working on for a while, but I was waiting for prices to, you know, I was waiting for sales, basically, and sold off my older kit. Now I have a two-lens kit that does everything that my five-lens kit used to do. All right, needless to say, that means I can fit it in one bag instead of four.
Okay.
All right. Now, that was not a small amount of money, but, you know, but, yeah, I mean, there's people that, you know, that went out there and, you know, blew huge amounts of cash, and now they're, you know, their credit card is screaming at them.
Well, I mean, I guess where I'm going with this is that last week we talked about, earlier in the week, we talked about the mortgages, how many mortgages are now in arrears, 3.7%, which is a lot.
Right.
We talk about how many credit cards, or, no, it was small businesses were in arrears on their rent. It's like 37%.
Yeah, they can't pay their rent. It's like a third.
Yeah, it's like a third. It's huge. And all this stuff, and we see this money supply creeping up. We see the receipts, and you're the ones that point me to this, so thank you for that. The governmental receipts, if the economy's going so good, they shouldn't be down, and they're down.
Yeah, why aren't they up?
It's one thing to look at the net. It's quite another when you say the receipts are down. That's not so hot. I think that there's already pressure of people, and I know some of them, of, you know, Trump better get in there fast because he's going to fix all this in a month. And by the way, we can't wait the month.
Oh, and, yeah, right.
Well, what I'm saying is, where is this going here? We've got huge companies that are, you know,
kaboom.
Apple's 41 PE. I mean, I think the Federal Reserve must sense some kind of problem, or they wouldn't be pumping 7.6% rate into the economy when they're supposed to be fighting inflation, which they're not doing at all.
Right.
So I mean, where does? I mean, to a certain extent, I feel sorry for Trump. He's only got 4 years. I mean, if he doesn't do something miraculous like in 3 months, are there going to turn on him now or what?
Well, he doesn't have 4 years. He has 1 year to actually take the hit, because we have to be on the upside of the recession, and it'll be a big one and a bad one if he actually does what he has to do.
Is there any way? Is there any way? Okay.
Yes, he can do it.
Run with me here for a second. The alleged great last few years with the market going up and everything else has been a money supply, in my opinion. It's been a too much money issue, where regular people are not They're not participating. Right. I'm saying if somehow or another something happens where that turns the bus around a little bit and the market has Bitcoin's down to 20,000 or something, or someplace. I'm just lobbing this out there, and all of a sudden the market takes not a 3 or 4% hit. I won't say 50. Let's say it takes a 20 or 25%, which has done before, which would put a lot of these companies right back at their normal PE. Now, I don't think that's going to show, Carl, is a huge depression nominally, recession. I don't know that it's actually going to be a recession for everybody because they never participated in the first place. As long as they still have their job, nothing's going to happen to them.
Well, that's right. For them, it won't. For the people at the very top, it's going to be a disaster. But you know what? For the people at the very top that lose half their money, they're still richer than the guy at the bottom. So what's?
It's half the money they just made.
Well, it's half the money they just made that they didn't really make. They stole it.
As long as they don't borrow against it, I get that.
Okay, but a huge percentage of those people are wildly levered. And a 30% loss in the stock market will zero them, okay? Well, because they've got a tremendous amount of leverage out on that stuff. So you know, and one of the first things you learn as a trader is when you've got a bad deal going, you better get out of it because the probability is there that it may get much worse. And if you double into it, that's how you zero the account.
Well,
right? That's how you blow it up.
I hope that I've been as about as much of a voice out there as I can be, and that if a market goes up 50%, goes back down 50%, it's not like everybody's even. You've lost more money on the way down than you made on the way up. And everybody thinks I have four heads when I say that. But
if the market goes down by 50%, you now need a double to be even again.
Right, but if you have any kind of margin, and one of the pieces of history...
Any kind of leverage on, you're in trouble.
Yep. One of the pieces of history, and again, I mean, you know, I guess I'm going to anyway. I'm going to make a example of like the Bitcoin versus tulips. You know, and I think Bitcoin is pretty much an artificial stock, but so what? Some stocks that aren't worth anything are trading almost as high too, so what's the difference between it's almost the same thing. But if you read the history closely on the tulips, for a long period of time, Carl, it didn't matter. A bunch of people, guys that had money, guys like you, bid up the price of tulips.
Right.
But
there were was flowers.
But you paid cash.
Right.
And all of a sudden, one day, somebody said, boy, these things are so relentlessly going up, and they must have this value. Let's put them on the exchanges, sort of like Bitcoin. Duh. And then all of a sudden, somebody said, well, why should I have to put up all this cash? Why don't you lend me money for tools? Because all they do is go up. And as soon as that happened, on the way back down, it wasn't guys like you that paid $100 for a tulip. It went to $500, and now it's $200. You sit there and go, okay. I mean, you're not happy. You didn't sell it at $5, probably, but you're still okay. But if you borrowed another one at $500, and now it's down to $2, now you owe $100, right? Now it's a different program. So and the same thing has happened. That's why almost every time, I guess I can go back and prove this, Carl. You could probably help me on this. Russell would know off the top of his head. I'm going to say virtually every market top has been associated with either at or damn near a margin interest high.
Yep.
And that's because why would somebody who loves a stock at 200 so much be forced to sell it at 160? Because they borrowed to buy it, right?
Right, exactly.
If they didn't and they just still liked it, you just hang on to it if you paid cash. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but it's an option at least, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the way it works. And so, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think there's a tremendous amount of trouble coming. I think it's going to be very, very bad. But the problem that Powell is going to face, and I put this in my prediction ticker that I put up on Christmas, is that you've got the first 2 months that we know are in the bag from the MTS, and then you know there's essentially no evidence in the economy that December is any different. But of course, we will not know for a fact until second week of January when we get that.
Well, can you think off the top of your head of any December November, October timing that would somehow reverse that receipts? I can't think of one, but you know more about that than me.
Well, so, you know, there's a lot of variation from month to month because, you know, there's the... Now, January is typically an inflow month because the 1120s come in along with the estimateds. Okay, so that's a, you know, that's a month that's unusual, all right? But that's not true for December. December doesn't have anything funky related to it. So, yeah, I think there's some real trouble. And you know, there's all these people. There's all these, I mean, you look at the thread that I've got on the, with the prediction ticker. I've got people out there, and these are folks, some of these folks have been on my site since the last crash. And they're all, Dow's going to 50,000 or better this year. You know, S&P is going to trade 10. You know, Bitcoin is going to the moon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, NVIDIA is a $500 stock again after having split.
You're right? Talking about Tom, what's his name?
I'm just like, you know, I mean, this is Cramer stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, you know, some of the people that are doing this, you know, their incept dates on the forum are pretty new, right? They're, you know, they've only been on this system for, you know, a year or whatever, or, you know, last couple of years. But I got some people on there that have incept dates from 07. All right, I'm like, you guys know what happened the last time we got in this kind of a mess. And the thing is, from my perspective, what I see with you know, just kind of the way it feels like the 99-2000 rollover.
It does.
I got called every name in the book, and this was before I was blogging. But, you know, I had a bunch of friends that were still in the tech sector because, you know, I ran a company in the tech sector, right? So, I mean, you know, we kept in touch and we talked and everything else. And, you know, oh, you know, you missed this, you know, Cisco, da-da-da-da. I was like, you know what? I'm sitting down here in Florida. I'm enjoying my life. And you know, I think you guys are in for a big surprise and you're not going to like it very much. And then, of course, you know, come roughly March, well, we know what happened, right? But the thing is it feels the same way. And you've got an administration rollover, you got Trump coming into office, you got all this, you know, this hype over Dowgy or, you know, whatever it ends up being, right? And then at the same time, you've got the same sort of trend that I saw in the incoming data, you know, in terms of tax receipts and things like this, and the layoffs that were already happening in the tech industry. There's been something like 100,000 people that have been laid off in the tech industry in the United States in the last year. And you know, I mean, Intel cutting this many thousands of people, Dell cutting people, these guys cutting people, those guys cutting people. And it's like, on the one hand, I got people, I got folks like Vivek and Musk running around screaming about importing more low-cost tech workers on H1s. Yeah. On the other hand, they're laying people off, okay? And you're telling me the economy is great and we're going to the moon, Alice. And I'm like, this smells exactly like 1999 in December.
I think they've got people that are totally unclear on the concept. But the fix has been for the last 20 years, really, or more, certainly since 2000, the fix has been every time you send something like this, you pour more money in the system and it saves the stock market. If all of a sudden that doesn't work, it's going to be, it's a problem. You know, one way you could get, if somebody, it wouldn't be us, because we're balanced in our stuff. We just point out the, you know, what the numbers look like, and
right.
we're not telling anybody to sell anything or anything like that. But what if somebody did get on CNBC with the bow ties or whatever the hell the guys that try to look smart, if they were to say, man, you got to sell all your crap before like next Tuesday, and people actually did, you know, I don't know who the hell would do that, but if everybody did. You could create enough tax liability, I think, to goose the December receipt numbers a little bit, maybe, or the January ones. But that would be a one-time deal.
The December ones, yeah, because, you know, anybody that's on the professional trading side, you have to mark to market on December 31st.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, there's that. There's also, you know, if you're sitting on big gains, and you take them, well, you get, guess what? You get to pay taxes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a... I mean, there's that aspect of it, too. But the thing that I thought was so interesting was that in the turn of 99 to 2000,
nobody ditched out at the end of the year. No one. All right, because no one thought the band was going to stop playing.
These things are, I mean, again, I'm not giving any kind of investment advice, but it bothers me that Apple and Vidi and a few of these things, they're no longer investments, they're religions.
Yeah.
And that's, exactly. That's a problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's my, you know, what I always look at is, you know, being in the technology field literally my entire professional life, this is, you know, this is one of those places where I can look at, you know, at the forward prospects and say, okay, you guys make this. This is, you know, this is how you make your money. What is the so-called paradigm shift that is down the road that justifies what is a outrageously inflated price today? All right, because, you know, people always say, well, they'll grow into it. Well, to grow into it, you have to have something that's going to change that makes that make sense.
Well, you also got to be of a size that can grow.
Well, it's a whole lot harder to grow from a $20 billion company to a $40 billion one than it is to grow from a $1 billion company to a two.
Yep.
Okay? And the other thing that always goes on, and that people, I don't know why people seem to forget this, but they do, there is a natural thing in economics. When you get to about a 10% operating margin, other people have a reason to come in and shoot at you it's worth it. It's just because it's worth it. It's not, you know, it's not any more complicated than that. And that, by the way, is why insurance companies by law are supposed to be limited to 10% operating margins, because that's, you know, it's considered a natural monopoly of sorts. Of course, in the health world, they figured out how to get away around this by using captive LLCs and PBMs and, you know, and all kinds of machinations. Which, by the way, is why companies like Aetna and these other guys have, you know, since Obamacare came in, have seen their stock price go up by 10 to 20 times.
Oh, yeah. We got a dash here, Carl, but we'll have you back. Obviously, you're back on Tuesday before the new year. How many people would be throwing stuff at my grandfather when he would say, never be afraid to leave a little something for the next guy when you sell your stock? Now it's a sin if you don't get the absolute top, right?
Oh, everybody. And, you know, I would always rather be early than late.
Oh, yeah. Well, buddy, have a nice weekend. You're just hanging?
Yeah, I got nothing really going on this weekend. I got some fireworks for New Year's Eve, because around here we can shoot them.
What about the NFL Network is trying again tomorrow with three games? I thought every time they try that thing, they pull it back for a year. Now they're trying it again tomorrow. Who the hell's got the NFL Network?
I have, you know, the whole Netflix thing with that, you know, the disaster was with that fight, and then apparently they had some games on Christmas Day. I didn't actually watch them.
Yeah, they did. They were Netflix.
But I don't know if they actually got their act together after.
Well, the streaming seemed okay. There was looked to me like they were really short on commercials. They claimed they had 33 million people watch it here, and like, you know, 50 or 60 worldwide. But I didn't see any. If that's the truth, somebody should have bought a commercial. There weren't very many. They kept advertising like their own shows and stuff.
Oh, well, all right. Well, hey, listen, that's better than, you know, here's a drug for this, and by the way, your wiener will fall off if you take it.
Well, I love that. You know, it's got to be, you know, there's got to be really a lot of dumb sayings in history. The first is, don't drink milk if you're allergic to milk. Well, how the hell do you know?
Yeah.
how do you know if you're allergic the first time?
Exactly.
Anyway, have a good weekend. Talking to you on Tuesday. Ricky, thank you. SP Futures down 30 now. NASDAQ Futures down 123. I think we'll probably still be up on the week, but we will see.
Yep.
That's all, folks.